Welcome, Hog fans, into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I'm Blake Sutton from Whole Hog Sports. I'm here with Scotty Bordelon, also from Whole Hog Sports. We are inside Bud Walton Arena on campus of the University of Arkansas. Head coach Mike Anderson just finished up his Thursday press conference. He seemed a little more positive. Hogs have won four SEC games in a row. I thought he handled the press conference a little differently than he normally does. Seemed like he had a little added, confidence today. What did you think, Scotty?
I don't know. That's what we walked in here to sit down to do this, and I asked you what you thought of one of the questions I asked.
Yeah.
And I asked a couple of questions about Isaiah Joe, because Isaiah Joe, I've probably written this on our message board a million times, but I covered Isaiah in high school when he was at Fort Smith Northside, so I've watched him play for a long time, and even when I moved up here to Fayetteville to cover Springdale Harbor and Springdale High, I would still see Isaiah play.
Yeah.
Because Harbor and I think the year after I stopped covering Northside, Harbor and Northside played, I think, in a state semifinal down in Van Buren. So I watched Isaiah play a lot, and he's 4 3-pointers away from tying Rodney Clark's freshman record for 3-pointers made in a season.
Wow.
And there's still more than a month to go.
Yeah.
And that's kind of absurd. And I think he's at 79 now, and Rodney Clark's record is 83. So,
I thought Rodney Clark was a good shooter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're both terrific shooters. And, you're getting close to 83-pointers in your first year in college ball. It's insane. And it means that you're knocking down shots at a really high rate. And, he shoots a lot of threes, but you don't really feel bad about any of the shots that he does take.
Yeah.
I feel with the exception of a few, and I can think back to the Georgia Tech game, he took a really ill-advised one from the top of the key, and I know he's had a couple of his threes blocked this year. I know he had one blocked at LSU the other day, but you feel really comfortable whenever he lets a shot go. And so I asked Mike, I said, what runs through your mind when Isaiah kind of goes on one of those tears like he did Tuesday night against Vanderbilt, where Arkansas is really flat. They're playing offensively, they looked atrocious.
Down by 10 in the first half to the worst team in the league.
To one of the only two teams in Power 5 conference that doesn't have a league win.
Yeah.
And you're down 10. And I said, what's going through your mind when Isaiah goes on one of those tears where he hit four threes in about a 2.5-minute span the other night?
Yeah.
And it brought him back to life a little bit. And he's just like, oh, he's a good shooter. He's a good shooter. And I was kind of aiming for kind of a glory quote, I guess, about Isaiah, but I don't know. It was different. I wasn't trying to access files or anything. I just wanted what do you think? Because I know what I'm thinking. I'm just like, he's on a different plane of existence sometimes, the way he shoots the ball. But
eventually Mike said, just keep shooting.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Just keep shooting.
Yeah. Well, he was on fire the other night. You could just tell in the first half he was feeling really comfortable. He really found his stroke. Just the way we were watching from press row, just the way the ball was coming off of his hand. He just has such a pure shooting
motion.
Been
like that for years, dude.
Yeah.
That's what – when I first went to watch him practice at Northside, I was pretty new. I didn't know a whole lot about Northside and what they were bringing back outside of their starting point guard. And they've got this sophomore that I watched him shoot, and I'm just like, holy cow. Every time, feathery soft touch –
silky smooth.
Yeah, silky smooth for sure. And every time the ball came out of his hands, his coach would throw up the the three with his fingers on the sideline when they're scrimmaging and stuff. And you don't see that from coaches a lot.
Yeah.
And Isaiah's high school coach gave Isaiah the green light as a sophomore to shoot anytime he crossed half court and felt comfortable.
Yeah.
That's insane.
You don't get more.
It also tells you just how good he was at an early age.
You don't get much more of a green light than that.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
Well, we spent all this time just gushing about Isaiah Joe, but how could you not? He finished with 18 points, and like you said, he really got Arkansas and the crowd back into it. before halftime. It was looking pretty bleak in the first half, and then Isaiah Joe gets four threes in a row, just bang, 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 bang. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas was still, even after all that, Arkansas was still trailing at halftime by 1 point. But right. You kind of felt like the momentum had shifted.
Yeah.
But in the second half, when it looked like Arkansas was going to run away with it, they got a 10-point lead with about, 10 minutes left in the second half. You're thinking, okay, Arkansas is in control. They're going to cruise.
I wrote that in my live updates. I'm like, this lead feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Because I know how bad Vanderbilt is. Like, it's not hard to understand why they still haven't won a game in conference. Like, they don't do – there's a lot of teams can, like, hang their hat on something. Vanderbilt really doesn't, other than, I guess, they get to the free throw line pretty well. But outside of that, it felt really comfortable.
And then they just start raining down threes. And they felt like they couldn't miss from three, and they were making everything. They took the lead back. That was, you know, that was scary to me. In the second half, my dad was at the game. I went and watched the second half with him. When Vandy made that three, Arkansas had a 1 point lead, and then Vandy made a three
with under a minute
to go
left,
up by
right?
two with 36 seconds left.
Yeah,
I think
wasn't a whole lot of time.
I turned and looked at my dad, and we didn't say anything. We were both kind of speechless, and we were just looking at each other, thinking the same thing, thinking Arkansas is about to lose to Vanderbilt at home.
Yeah.
Who's on a 9-game losing streak?
That would
have
been,
Mike,
would have been
game.
Mike's fifth loss at home. That would have been the most in any year in his tenure here. That would have been a really ugly one to put you over the top too.
Oh man, can you imagine the outcry if Arkansas had lost to Vanderbilt? I don't even want to think about that. Let's think positive. But you know, I was not expecting Keyshawn Embry Simpson to save the day. We haven't even talked about Daniel Gafford yet. Arkansas was having a lot of success getting the ball to Daniel Gafford down low. He finished with 28 points. You thought that's what they were going to try to do, tie the game, hopefully send it to overtime, hopefully maybe get a turnover in the final seconds. Mm-hmm. But Isaiah Joe had shot so well in the game. And, you know, Mason Jones is kind of your other established shooter. He didn't have a very big game, only finished with 7 points.
Right.
But I think that Vandy was so focused on not letting Isaiah get open and not letting Mason Jones get open, they forgot about little Keyshawn.
Yeah.
And I saw a graphic on Twitter, I think hogstats.com put it up. He literally, they drew a line down the midpoint of the court. He had half the court open to himself. Nobody saw him go over there.
Yeah.
He was so
worried
open
about him.
And I didn't think it. When I saw the shot leave his hands, I thought it was going to be short. No, it went right in.
Yeah, talk Swiss. About a guy who's shooting the ball well when they need it. A week after I wrote that.
He must have listened to the podcast.
He needed to shoot the ball better.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I've written a couple of times that he was 4 of 25 from 3 in January. Mm-hmm. And through two games this month, he's already hit 5 threes. Wow. And the fifth three that put it over the top was the biggest shot of his life so far.
Yeah.
And they left him wide open. He had, you know, he had time to file his taxes and all kinds of stuff over there. Like, he had plenty of space, plenty of time. And the thing was, like, everybody's talked about this before, but he had an opportunity to shoot it before that, about 10 seconds before that.
Passed it up.
And then they swung it around. And I thought Isaiah Joe might turn the ball over because I think Saban Lee was in his grill pretty good, and Isaiah was a little shaky with the handle, but Isaiah somehow got it to Dan, and then Dan split a double team and found Keyshawn, and the Keyshaw was back.
Yeah. What a big moment for him, for the young freshman. You know, that's got to feel good to, you know, get a pretty much a game, I mean, call it go ahead. I mean, pretty much a game-winning shot.
Yeah, it was a game winner.
In your first season in college basketball.
Especially after you struggle so bad, like the first month of conference, like you're pretty much a non-factor.
Yeah.
I mean, you could call 4 for 25. I mean, that's 16% from deep. Like, that's just Jalen Harris range. and you know you can shoot it better than that. As we know, he was a pretty prolific scorer in Oklahoma in high school. And then went to IMG and got hurt and didn't play a whole lot last year. I think he's finally like starting to feel comfortable and like back on his feet, and like even. Before that, the only other shot that Keyshawn made before his game winner, he curled a screen really nicely, caught the ball, and had some space. And I think the only person between him and the rim was a Vanderbilt big, and I think it was the Chitou kid.
Yeah.
And Keyshawn just kind of takes a step towards him, a dribble, and then kind of steps back, a little fadeaway jumper from inside the free throw line. Like, that's a shot that he could knock down with some consistency. You know, even though his 3-point shot doesn't have to be going, but that's a shot that he could nail, and that obviously be a big plus.
Yeah, and like you said last week, and Keyshawn, if you are listening to the podcast, we'll just give you a shout out real quick, because he took your advice, I think, from last week's podcast.
Not to toot my own horn, but like, I mean, you just want to alleviate a little bit of the pressure that Mason and Isaiah are feeling.
Yeah,
and you know, Mike, I also wrote on that too about Keyshawn. I mentioned Desi too, and bless Desi's heart, like he can't stay in the game long enough, because he's
hitting the floor
really hard or
yeah,
or whatever. But yeah, I mean, Keyshawn's playing really well, and I forgot what I was about to say. It was going to be a really good point, but oh, Mike is starting to trust him a lot more.
Yeah,
and Mike's playing him a lot more, and I think like Keyshawn's played pretty well defensively. I'm not sure what his personal defensive rating is, but it's probably pretty solid for the course of the year. But I mean, Mike's trusted him more, and I think if he can knock down shots, he's obviously going to stay out there a little bit longer. Maybe give Jalen some rest, or if Isaiah or Mason need a breather, feel pretty comfortable throwing him in there.
Yeah, and a game like, you know, he had the game-winning shot. He only finished with 5 points, but yeah. I think a shot like that can kind of be a snowball effect with your confidence, you know. Mm-hmm. So in the first half of the season, you saw Keyshawn pass up a lot of open shots. He'd be out on the perimeter and be open, and you're thinking, shoot it, man.
And then
he would dribble and go inside a little bit and then kick it back out. But if he's going to – this could have done a lot for his confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think some of his struggles too, not to just labor on his January, what he did in January, but I think a lot of it with him is he doesn't always – when he lets shots go, his shoulders aren't always square. His feet aren't always, like, underneath him. If that makes any sense. Like, sometimes he's got his right foot like 6 or 8 inches close to a foot, like out in front of his left one, and that's going to throw you a little bit out of whack. And so he's looked like, and what I really like about it is he's making shots, and he's letting the defenders know that he's making shots on them too. I really like that. He's talking a little bit of smack and just letting guys know that he's giving them buckets. And he really did that at LSU. He played really well in that game too, which was – they needed every bit of that against LSU.
Which we haven't even mentioned yet. What a win for these young Razorbacks to pick up on the road. Sold out PMAC Arena in Baton Rouge. Silenced the crowd with a 1-point win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could early in the season, I would have said their best win would have been that Indiana game. Now it's got to be that road game at LSU. And last week on the podcast, we did not predict Arkansas to win that game, but we did say it was going to be close. And so we were half right.
Mm-hmm.
It was a, 1-point game.
I didn't think it would be close, but
oh yeah,
man, I'm wrong once. I've been wrong before plenty of times.
It would have been with the free throw disparity. It would have been a really hard loss to swallow for Razorback fans, because when
Arkansas won the game and they're still upset. that's how bad they think the officiating was. And
yeah, what was it, like 38-11 or something like that on free throw attempts? I think the most frustrating part about that aspect of college basketball right now is, as a fan, when you're just watching on TV, you just feel so helpless and just powerless. You're at the whim of these refs that are just giving you a raw deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really frustrating feeling. So Hog fans had to feel good after that one. The way Arkansas, you know, they did relinquish an 18-point second half lead, but I think LSU had, what, 32 points on free throws? I mean, come, that's insane.
Yeah, like, pretty wild.
Like 30 of your points from free throws, like, come on. That's not even fun to watch. I mean,
yeah.
The LSU fans were happy because they think they're going to win the game.
There's whistles every 15 or 20 seconds. Like, there's no flow to the game.
It's hard to watch.
And it just becomes you watching guys stand around the standing around the rim and watch a guy shoot free throws all night. That's just, that's not fun to watch. And something else, like, I really don't like badgering officials and the officiating, because there's always something that you could have done better to have prevented the official from having to blow a whistle late and deciding the game. Like, there's always something you could have done better. But, like, I will even say, like, there were a few plays, like, late in the game, I think there's like a minute left, and Keyshawn's bringing the ball up the floor. Tremont Waters, like, gets a hand on the ball or something. The ball kind of squirts away from Keyshawn, and Keyshawn dives on it, calls a timeout. But Tremont Waters dives on Keyshawn.
Yeah.
Right in front of the official. He can't do that. Yeah. And then Arkansas is trying to break pressure one time. And I know this was the one that Tom Murphy, who was at the game, he was like, that was the most egregious one of all of them, is when Arkansas, I think, was trying to break the press, and Isaiah Joe is waiting on a pass, I think, from either Mason or Jalen. And he goes up and he tries to collect the pass with, like, one hand, and he's about to bring it into his right. But before he can do that, his left arm gets taken away by an LSU defender. He falls out of bounds, and it's just play on. And I think LSU, like, gets an and one out of it. Like, it's – I don't know what to say. Like, there were people, like, digging into the history of some of the officials and stuff. Like, it got to that point. Like, it reached that level of, I can't believe that the officiating was that iffy.
I mean, I hate to overstate it, but it's kind of like ruining college basketball when you have games like that.
And the games take 2.5 hours to play, man. That's
And
we're not, I mean, that hurts us. That's, we're not getting, I didn't walk out of the arena the other night against Vanderbilt until like 1:10. I mean, it's not like solely because of the officiating, but like, the games are taking longer because they're calling fouls. They're calling tons and tons of fouls.
Every trip up the
floor. It's not fun to watch.
No, but what are we going to do? I mean, if I was king for a day in the NCAA, I would just – my thing is the ticky-tack fouls. It's like, basketball is a contact sport, you know.
You just want the players to call their own fouls? We just go blacktop rolls?
Yeah, no blood, no foul.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but that's what's most frustrating to me. On either end of the floor, really. I'm not like a huge homer. When they're calling ticky-tack fouls, it's just like, come on, just let them play. Like, this is, you're slowing the game down. You're having to walk up the floor to shoot 1-1 with there's 13 minutes left in the half. I think that
yeah, that's the worst.
Happened in the Vanderbilt games. They Arkansas was in the bonus with like 14 minutes left.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, it's not good for the game. But that's a whole other topic altogether. Arkansas's next opponent. You know, for the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about where Arkansas might be able to steal some games on the road. Nobody was expecting one of those to be LSU, but South Carolina was a candidate for one of those games that they could pick up on the road.
Even before they started, like, 2-0 in conference, beating Florida and Mississippi State, I was like, that's a game. I'd probably still said it afterwards because, like, they're just playing above their head a little bit.
Yeah, South Carolina, they've been a weird team this year. Yeah, they beat Auburn, but then they lose to Kentucky by almost 30.
Man, let me pull up their KenPom page. Game. I got something better than that for you. They lost to Stony Brook, who's a baseball school.
Yeah, the Seawolves, right?
Something like, I guess. They lost to Providence, lost to Wofford, lost to Wyoming.
But they beat Mississippi State. They beat...
Yeah, beat Florida, beat Mississippi State to start. Like, they started 4-0 in conference, and then they beat Auburn.
Yeah. Weird team.
Very weird team.
And now they're sitting at 11-11, so maybe that's fitting. You know, they're just
– Yeah.
They've had some bad losses, and they have some good wins, and they're just right down the middle of the road. They're 11-11, 7-5 at home, not a good home record. So
this could be – But I think at this point in the year, and I may be wrong on this – but I think at this point in the year, you can't figure a team out. That might not be a good thing.
Right.
At this point in the year. But I was listening to the SEC teleconference, the coaches teleconference on Monday, and I think there was a Vanderbilt writer who was trying to get something from Frank Martin, his South Carolina teams have not always started, obviously not always started 4-0 in conference. And so the reporter was asking Frank about, just what do you do when your team's just not playing well, and haven't won a game in a while in conference play. What do you do? And Frank, he gave his spiel, and then he added that, like, they just got – South Carolina got hit with some injuries early in the year, like October and November. They were hit with some injuries, which is a bad time for that to happen. Mm-hmm. Early in the year when you're trying to build your resume, and or you want to get some you want to pick up obviously some wins. Like, I think if they're healthy, they beat Wofford, they beat Wyoming and Stony Brook. Like, that, I don't think that's a stretch to say.
Yeah,
but I think they're getting, he said, like, sometime in December he felt like they were starting to get healthier, and they've got one of the better forwards in the league in Chris Silva, and they've got some solid guard play, and they're starting, I think this team, let's talk about it a little later, but like, South Carolina plays at a pretty like a fast pace for one of Frank Martin's teams. So Saturday could be pretty interesting. I think that South Carolina wanting to play at a faster pace, I'll be interested to see if they actually do, because I think an up and down game favors Arkansas.
Oh, absolutely. Arkansas is going to try to speed them up, you know, fastest 40. Have we checked how fast they are?
Fastest.
Last time we checked, they were the 36th
actual fastest 40 update. Yeah. 45th.
Oh, they got slower.
Fastest 45th, fastest 40.
Well, nobody tell Mike Anderson. He's not going to be happy to hear
so
that.
So speaking of, like, pace and stuff, so KenPom's got this little option where you can click on, like, the game plan. You can see the result, the pace, the offensive efficiency for offense and defense and that kind of thing. And it also, like, one of the columns is pace, and the Vanderbilt game on Tuesday was the slowest pace Arkansas had played at all year. Just 63 possessions. The next lowest was, I think, 68 against Texas Tech. So Arkansas played at Vanderbilt's pace, still somehow won the game.
Almost came back to bite them.
Yeah, for sure. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if that the pace Saturday gets close to 70. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But I honestly haven't seen a whole lot of South Carolina, so I don't really know what they look like when they're running. I'm just kind of used to half court, throw it to Chris Silva, let him get fouled and shoot a million free throws.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of used to that, so we'll see.
2:30 Central, SEC Network. Arkansas will take on the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Coached by Frank Martin, he's always an interesting character, you know, mm-hmm. bit of a hothead. Yeah. You might even call him a hothead's hothead.
Yeah, for sure.
Very animated on the sidelines, really gets a lot out of his players.
Put the fear of God in his players.
Yeah, he's a scary guy.
But he'll get a lot out of those kids. Like,
yeah.
Who in the world expected South Carolina to go to the Final Four a couple years ago? Nobody.
Yeah. As a 7 seed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. He gets a lot out of his players. So.
Well, they need a win pretty badly. They've lost 3 of their last 4. They lost at Oklahoma State in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Lost at home to Tennessee by 22, but Tennessee's been
everybody
doing that to
loses
everybody.
In Tennessee by 22.
Yeah, that's probably their average in conference margin of victory. They beat Georgia in Athens, and then they turn around and lose to Kentucky by almost 30. They lost 76-48.
Dude, they were down. What was it? I need to check the halftime score on that, but I'm pretty sure it was a game at halftime. It was. South yeah. Carolina, 28. Okay, maybe not.
Well, down by 11 at half, but that's better than losing by 20.
Yeah, I mean, they played Kentucky pretty tight the first 10 minutes, and then it just, man, that second 10 minutes of the first half and the first 10 of the second half just crushed them.
Yeah.
Crushed them.
Kentucky looks, not to start talking about Kentucky already, but.
Seriously, though, I've noticed, like, in the last couple of weeks, like, they're playing so good.
It happens really every year, well. Man. I feel like it's just – it's like changed the record already. It's the beginning of the season. They have a few stumbles because they have all these freshmen. You're thinking, oh, maybe this is the year where Kentucky's not very good. And then by the end of the season, they win the SEC tournament.
Like, newsflash, no, it's not.
Yeah. So,
rebound the ball so well, dude. And that's – I think about that a lot. It's like Arkansas still has to go to Kentucky. They still got to go to Rupp. And – Arkansas gives up quite a few offensive rebounds in Kentucky, dude. That's how they beat South Carolina so bad. They just dominated South Carolina on the glass. And, like, Kentucky even dominated Kansas on the glass. I know Kansas was not his big guy, but Kansas still got a bunch of talented bigs, a bunch of talented players. They just crushed Kansas on the glass. That's that's a game where you're like, you think Arkansas might be able to go in there and be competitive and be like, hey, we hung with Kentucky on the road. They're a top five team now. Maybe if we can do that, then people start paying a little bit more attention to us. I don't know. Kentucky's like finally back in the top five now. That Reed Travis kid, they've actually got a guy who's been in school for more than a year on their team.
Oh, wow.
I think he's been there. I think he transferred from Stanford. He is an animal on the glass. I think he's going to be a big problem. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself.
That's a little ways down the road.
I just really like watching him go to the glass. Like he's a monster.
Well, probably, you know, luckily for Arkansas, they only have to play Kentucky once this mm-hmm. year. But yeah, just look, you know, we keep talking about stringing together wins in these past few podcasts we've done. Does Arkansas ever have an opportunity to string together some wins? And you're starting to see that. The LSU game was going to be a speed bump, and they ended up winning that one. And now then they beat Vanderbilt. Now you have, I think, two winnable road games coming up at South Carolina, obviously on Saturday, and then next Tuesday at Missouri. I think those are two games they can win. And then if they can manage to win those, I'm probably getting a little too far ahead of myself because they are both road games, and it's tough to win on the road mm-hmm. in any conference. That Mississippi State game at home, Saturday, home game, that could be a big crowd, could be a big game if they can manage to win both of these next two. Because what's their record right now, 14-8?
Yes.
That put them at 16-8.
And then you got four Saturday home games.
Yeah, they'd be 16-8, and then you'd have four straight Saturday home game, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, four straight Saturday home games. That's huge. That's huge for these young dudes. And then March 2nd, they play Ole Miss here, and that's the day that they're wearing the mm-hmm. throwback uniforms that got leaked a little bit earlier in the week.
Which look really nice.
Look pretty sick.
Oh, man, I like those. But we might be putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but isn't it so much nicer to be able to talk about this kind of stuff?
I think it's okay. Like if Arkansas splits the next two road games, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I think it's all right.
Well, I mean, just a few weeks ago, we're talking about they might not even make the NIT, and now we're talking they might have
to back. They could split those home game or split those two road games, and so you'd be at 15, and then say you take care of business at home on Saturday, which Arkansas has been great at home on Saturdays under Mike. I forget what his record is. It's like, I think he's like 40. I've got it on my laptop somewhere. I'd have to look, but I think he's like 45-6 or something like that. So he's been ridiculously good. Mm-hmm. So you split those two road games, put you at 15. You win your home Saturday games, put you at 19.
That's 19 wins heading into the SEC
tournament. That's kind of the marker that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. I thought they needed to hit. And then you go win a game at the SEC tournament.
Boom, you got 20 wins.
20. And that's also not taking into account a couple of the midweek games that you've got, right? So, I mean, you got Kentucky.
Kentucky, you go to
Vanderbilt.
Yeah. That's a winnable game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that'll be tough playing at Vanderbilt. And obviously, I mean, three really hard, really tough road games. But all your Saturday home games are very winnable. Who is it? Mississippi State, A&M.
A&M, Ole Miss, and Alabama.
Yeah, those are winnable. Yeah, you can win those games. But I don't know. I obviously don't want to get ahead of myself. But, I mean, the potential is there for them to get to 19 if they split. If they split these two road games, which isn't a whole lot. Like, it's not
– not too much to ask.
That's not too much to ask for sure. I think maybe – predicting that they win both would be doing a little too much, but they've shown they can play on the road and play well on the road. Like their two best offensive games of the entire season outside of FIU that was played here, and I mean that was just a glorified pickup game. But Arkansas's two best games offensively of the year are both on the road at Colorado State and LSU. So I mean, who knows? They could get there.
Yeah. Hey.
They always play better in February, and I was kind of wondering how that was going to play out this year because obviously the makeup of this team is so much different than the teams that Mike's had the last couple of years that have just kind of – they've really gained a lot of steam the last two Februaries.
Yeah.
I was kind of wondering how that was going to play out this year, but, I mean, they're off to a pretty good start thanks to a couple game winners.
And it's a lot more fun to talk about this kind of stuff, like which games they can pick up to make the tournament instead of talking about they might not even make the NIT. So maybe the tides are turning in Fayetteville. We'll see. We have a few more weeks left of the season. We will be here every week doing the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Arkansas's next game at South Carolina on the SEC Network at 2:30. We'll have coverage from that. We'll be back next week to talk about both those road games and then the Mississippi State game next Saturday when their Hogs are back in Bud Walton Arena. But until then, for Scotty Bordelon, I'm Blake Sutton. We're with Whole Hog Sports. This is the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Thanks for listening.